Hi, I'm Pete Krull, and we are back with another episode of Dollars and Change, the expert's guide to sustainable and responsible investing. And we are out here at the ESG for Impact conference just outside of Boulder, Colorado. And with me today is my friend, Rachel Robichaudi. Did I get that right?
Close,
all right.
Robichaudi.
I knew I was going to mess that up, but yeah. Thank you. Anyway, she is with Adesina Social Capital, and they are doing some amazing things, not just on the sustainable side, but also on the social justice side. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to this place, and what your focus is right now.
Sure. So Adesina is a public markets impact asset manager that specializes in social justice investing. So what we do is partner with social justice organizations to advance racial, gender, economic, and climate justice using the tools of financial markets. And that's a mouthful. So the next question is usually, how do you go about doing that?
Right.
Yeah, we do that in a couple of ways. One is through our investment products, and the other is through our unique approach to making impact that I'll be happy to talk
Absolutely.
More about. So that's kind of like what we do.
Well, I want to hear about what
How
led
did
you
I get
personally
here?
To the,
yes.
what was your path?
Yeah. So many people start by talking about their schooling mm-hmm. or their first jobs, and those things are relevant. But for me, it actually started growing up in a very poor segregated community in rural Northern California called Oroville. The Black community there was brought up from the South. To work on the dam. We have the tallest dam in the United States there.
When was that?
In the 1930s.
Okay.
Yeah, and we were segregated into living and buying homes in the south side of Oroville.
Okay.
The families were mostly run by women because the men had been taken out of the community, as has so often been the case.
Right.
Over hundreds of years as a result of over-policing. So incarceration, murder by police officers, mm-hmm. something that's happened in our family.
We continue to see.
Yes.
Today.
Yeah, it's caught on cell phone now.
Yeah.
So.
That's right. That's right.
That is a mixed blessing. At least no one's kind of questioning it
right.
so much anymore. So I grew up with this deep consciousness of racial, gender, and economic justice being intertwined. We were poor because we were women, and the jobs went
right.
to men, and the men were not in the community. And so
just
there
was a vicious cycle.
Really was. But
yeah.
I didn't have any climate consciousness until after some extreme weather in 2017, the dam started to collapse. Yes.
Interesting.
It made international news.
I think I remember reading about that, yeah.
I was coming back from an international trip and was quite surprised to see my hometown news. Yeah.
Especially a small town, right?
You're right, a very small town. I'm like,
yeah.
What's this doing in the Associated Press?
Yeah.
So at that time, I had a wealth management firm, had been doing wealth management work for about 15 years. Had really started doing more asset management directly for clients, focusing on racial, gender, economic justice.
Where were you doing that?
We had our own firm, an independent Robichaudi.
What city?
Oh, I was in San Francisco.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My life really changed at that point. A couple of things happened. One is that I wanted to do something about what I saw, which was when the dam began to collapse. The first area that had to be evacuated, you could actually see it on the news, like the flood inundation area. You can
right.
guess where it was.
Where you grew up.
The South Side.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right. This idea that as humans, we've made some groups of humans kind of like more discardable, disposable.
Expendable.
Yeah. It's that same orientation of extraction and exploitation mm-hmm. that both applies to communities and to the planet. We're always going to see racial, gender, economic, and climate justice show up. Those issues show up together.
Yep.
And it became really important to go closer to the impacts. And we really saw that we're closer to the impacts when we're in the asset management space.
Right.
Asset management is really control over our collective resources. And this problem that we had in Oroville is not an isolated problem. This is actually a problem with the way that we built this society.
Right.
And so we need to bring some really big tools like our collective resources that are mostly in public markets
yep.
to bear on fixing and addressing these issues.
Absolutely.
So that's when we started to launch in 2018, We launched a fully operational social justice investing portion of our business. It actually grew to a size that where it was competing with the wealth management business. And out of
which is a good problem to have.
Which is a great problem.
Yeah, exactly.
We have two companies competing with one another. So we actually merged the wealth management firm in with another firm and focused exclusively on Adesina from 2020 on.
That's great. I love the idea how you transition from one side of the business to another side of the business. We do both sides. We've got advisory, and we've also got asset management as well. We haven't grown to that point where we would separate the two out, but I think that's amazing that you had enough demand that people saw the value in bringing social justice to their investment portfolios. I think that's huge. So are you continuing to see that demand post-split?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually only grown. I think that in order to meet what investors are looking for, investors want, think of our clients, want the asset managers they're working with to actually move the needle on these issues. And they don't want to pick climate, racial justice, gender. I mean, otherwise we're playing kind of like issue whack-a-mole, going after one at a time.
Right.
There are ways we can address some of the most serious concerns at the intersections of these issues and make tremendous progress from an impact perspective. We do that quite specifically through investor mobilization.
Okay.
So that means, I said there were kind of like two ways that we advance social justice using public markets. So one of them is our impact approach. So we extend impact beyond the boundary of our own portfolio.
Okay.
We actually go out and mobilize large coalitions of investors to work collectively on these issues. And then in our own portfolio, we are often the first to invest based on social justice factors. And we take a rigorous and consistent investment discipline to like translate those social justice factors that we get from the communities we intend to impact through their social justice organizations.
So it's sort of a bottom-up kind of approach to this. Mm-hmm. So tell me how you bring these coalitions together and you know, start to move forward that way.
So the coalitions are campaign specific.
Okay.
And we've had a number of campaigns. So one example of a campaign that we had was one focused on ending forced arbitration for sexual harassment. That was directly a request from gender justice organizations during the Me Too movement.
Okay.
Most of the investing world was focusing on building portfolios based on whether or not women were on the board, which is important for inclusion.
Of course it is.
But does not address serial sexual harassment in the workplace. Forced arbitration was found to be this policy that allowed perpetrators to continue and stacked the deck in favor of the employer and silenced the victims. We were asked, can you do something about this? Yeah. This is actually the core problem. So when we go directly to the communities, they give us a sense of the root cause of the problem, not just finance talking to each other about data we already have. This is actually the root of the problem. We're able to go out and get the data and work with a coalition of $54 billion of investors that also wanted to move the needle on this issue.
That's
and
great.
I'm happy to say there's no more forced arbitration, in no small part due to investors standing up and saying, we're done with this practice. So it doesn't exist anymore. Bipartisan legislation was passed and investors had a lot to do with that.
That's huge.
In 2022.
I mean, you guys should be really, really proud of that.
We're pretty
proud.
Because,
you know, arbitration in general, I think, is a huge problem because it forces the little guy most of the time to sort of bow down to the big guy. And, you know, especially when we get into sexual harassment and that, what it does is it allows that perpetrator to just continue on their cycle.
It really does.
And it doesn't get out. Nobody knows about it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. The thing that most people don't know is that it's low-wage workers, African-American workers, and women that were disproportionately impacted by this. And like the work that we did transformed almost 400 companies to have them publicly end that practice that impacted over 10 million workers. I have to tell you, I'm not sure I had quite imagined that we would be advising at the highest levels of policymaking on the legislation that came down. I was very happy to have the data and the backing of the investor community to say, no, it's time to get rid of this.
Dream big, right?
Yeah, so that's 130 million workers.
That's fantastic.
That's impact.
So there were two parts. You said first there was coalition. What was the second part of your strategy?
So building the coalition is key. Another thing that's important is listening to the investors, the asset managers, when they tell us what is needed for them to take meaningful action.
Gotcha.
They need data. So we have 40 different criteria, over 80 different metrics. We publicly share data sets that match 8 of those metrics based on campaigns that we're running. And it's the data that allows investors to come together and make their own choices about whether they'll be part of the divestment movement for corporate actors that aren't behaving in alignment with this social justice issue. They can also engage if they are those who are holding the companies. Mm-hmm. And as is this case with forced arbitration, they can engage in public policy support, which can be quite meaningful. Investors can speak for the business community, and Congress is very slow to do anything that harms the business community, whether we like it or not. So it's really important for investors to step up and speak.
I mean, Congress gets paid by the business community.
It's true.
We have to admit that. That's just simply the way the way of the world. And so obviously that needs to change if we're going to, you know, really have a bigger impact long term. But I think what you're doing is really a nice predecessor to much bigger change. And being able to prove that what you're doing is, proof of concept, if you will, is excellent. And it gives other asset managers the opportunity to follow on your heels.
Well, that's why I am going to enroll the asset management funds that you have in participating in our campaigns.
Absolutely.
We have them going on all of the issues: racial, gender, economic, climate justice. The issue that I'm most passionate about at this moment is the subminimum wage. Investor coalition is a $1 trillion investor coalition committed to ending this practice. Mm-hmm. Our partner, One Fair Wage, is having success all throughout the country in major metropolitan areas and beyond ending the practice of paying the subminimum wage. You can pay someone $2.13 an hour, but pay this public company CEO tens of millions.
Yeah.
It's unconscionable. Like, this is not something that should be happening, and wait for it. Who do you think is most impacted?
People of color.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, basically marginalized people.
Yes, marginalized communities. Yeah. Women, people of color, low-wage workers.
LGBTQ, probably, yes.
Mm-hmm. And this is a wonderful example of how this is, of course, doing the right thing and having impact. But I have to tell you, publicly traded restaurant companies, who are the primary companies that pay the subminimum wage and were leading to impoverishment of their own human capital, so to speak, of their own people, these companies post-pandemic are having the worst staffing crisis in their history. It's so lovely that we're able to translate social justice metrics into consistent investable factors, because our portfolios are not invested in those restaurant companies paying the subminimum wage. So their struggles, which are reflected in their share prices, aren't something that we're experiencing.
Absolutely. I think that the more we can push those companies, so, you know, we're a strong believer that we're not going to own the companies that aren't going to change. So we're not going to buy Exxon, or we're not going to buy the big oil companies, because they're big oil. They're part of our existential crisis.
Yes.
And we're not going to change them with shareholder advocacy.
I really don't think so.
I don't think so either. And so,
non-binding advice to the management of companies that are extracting from our world, despite their ability to grow to their size because they took advantage of public markets. Yeah, we don't participate
in that. We don't want to participate in that either. Yeah. But you're showing that in certain cases, when you're selective and when you really focus, you can actually make an impact. And I think that's the big difference. There's a lot of people in our industry who believe you have to participate in all of them. You have to have a seat at the table. And I don't agree with them. I think that we really need to be very selective, and we need to focus on the issues that matter, issues like climate change and social justice issues.
Absolutely. And I believe climate change is intrinsic to social justice as well. It's one of those, you know, factors. It's interesting, too. We don't find that we've given up a seat at the table. So we don't own the shares of any of these publicly traded restaurant companies that pay the subminimum wage. But in the coalition, those who are choosing to engage have given us permission to show up at the annual shareholder meetings. And who do we have with us? Our social justice partners that do a wonderful job of making the case to end the practice.
Do you bring any of the people who are getting subminimum wage with
Absolutely.
You?
Oh, That is a core part of our strategy, is making sure that the communities we intend to impact, that their needs, their voices show up in the space. Because otherwise, impact can get kind of abstract and conceptual.
Of course it can.
And it's actually important to say, no, what community are we actually attempting to impact? And are they deeply involved in this conversation. Right. So kind of keeping us honest.
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't think that there are any other asset managers that are really doing something in the way that you're doing that, is there?
You know, we would like to have more competitors because then it would mean that our public markets have turned into an engine of transformation for society. That is the ultimate goal.
Right.
Yeah. This is our these are our collective resources. Almost all of them are in public markets. So we don't have anyone else that has our same approach. We do have friends that have similar approaches, and many times they're part of our coalitions. Mm-hmm. What's great is that whether they divest or engage, like whatever their approach, there's a space for them in the coalition. The shared thing that they all often need is data, and right. That's the piece that we put into the public domain.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
and it can really make a big difference.
So what are you most excited about? As we continue to move forward, as you continue to grow this part of your business, what are you most excited about?
Well, I think that we have a tremendous unfortunate experiences of climate change and climate chaos, and that can be very discouraging. Mm-hmm. But I believe and I can see that there are so many innovations and so many interventions that are available to us. We asked our social justice partners, what is the issue that is at the intersection of racial and climate justice? And they told us it is this extractive, industrialized agricultural system.
Okay.
So these are things like agrochemicals,
yep.
pesticides, Terminator seeds.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be scared, look those up.
My wife is a microbiologist and molecular geneticist, so I know all about that.
So
thank you, Monsanto.
Yes. So it's interesting. You're aware of that, but most investors still think that these very, very large agricultural companies are feeding the world, when in truth, they're the largest consumer of fossil fuels,
yep.
right? The largest single consumer of fossil fuels.
Yeah, because that is where fertilizers come from.
Exactly.
People don't realize that fertilizers come from fossil fuels.
Yep, they are petroleum-based.
Yep.
And it's been a really amazing thing to connect the dots between the fact that the people of color in the global south, they call themselves the peasant food web. You can also just think of them as local, regional, truly sustainable agricultural systems. They
right.
feed 70% of the world using only 25% of the resources. That's like land, water.
Right.
The other 75% is going to big ag.
Of course it is.
And most investors...
You know why? Because they have money and they own the politicians.
They make tremendous political contributions.
Yes, they do.
So I'm most excited. That is a huge intervention. If we think we're going to reach our climate goals without addressing extractive agriculture,
mm-hmm.
we really aren't seeing this
yeah.
very important intervention that is at the intersection of those two issues. And I think, to be really honest, that's the secret sauce with Adesina. The fact that we realize these issues are inextricably linked
yeah.
means that we work on issues at the intersection. And that is part of our recipe for having a tremendous impact.
It's sort of like the John Muir quote, you know, if you pull a string in nature, you find that it's connected to everything.
Yes, that is exactly that. It's the same thing with issues of social justice.
Right.
They're all deeply connected.
You know, we see so many environmental issues. You were talking about, you know, where you grew up. But, you know, even just down the road here in Denver is Commerce City, which is where there is a huge refinery.
Mm.
Well, who lives around the refinery?
Yeah, it's the millions of Black Americans often.
Yep.
Yep. That have increased cancer risk. Yeah. As a result.
They've got some of the highest asthma rates in
yes.
in those communities there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to wrap us up here.
I know we could just talk for hours.
I know that's the problem with this.
This is a certain length, and
we try to keep it to a certain length because we don't want to lose anybody. We want them to come to my final question that everybody gets.
Okay.
So, in light and you almost answered this a little bit, so I was like, damn it, but we're going to come back to it. So, in light of all the negative sort of climate
mm-hmm.
News, you know, from, you know, you live in California, but I don't mm-hmm. think that you had the issues with the hurricane that came through. But, you know,
no.
90 years or 80 some years since the last hurricane hit Southern California, it hits now.
Mm-hmm.
New England is getting hurricanes. You've got fires. You do have that in Northern California.
We have the fires and the extreme weather.
And droughts and all these things. So in light of all this negativity that we're seeing, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is reweaving the thread of our shared humanity.
Hmm.
we've forgotten that that we are all connected. And there's something interesting about finance where it kind of pulls the monetary piece out of kind of, you know, extracting the value within a business. It's kind of like pulling it apart from what the business actually does and the communities that it impacts. And bringing those closer together is the way that we are going to have a healthy, thriving planet. The first way to do that is to talk to the communities that you intend to impact if you're the one who manages the money. So find their organizations, talk to them. This isn't something just for Adesina to do, though I do hope that you'll invest with us in our exchange traded fund and also in our separately managed accounts. Like, of course you can invest with us, but this is also something that those of us who hold the capital can do to make a huge difference. We can see what type of impact we're making, and we're only 3 years old.
Yeah,
we can see what type of impact we're making already. Can you imagine if more of us were connecting more deeply with the communities we hope to impact?
The power of scale.
Yes.
Absolutely. Rachel Robichaudi?
Yes, perfect. Oh, yes.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
I would love to tell folks how to stay in touch, because it's true. We have to kind of end the podcast now.
Do it.
So text the word justice to 55444. And you will be in touch with us and signed up for our newsletter, which gives you the latest on social justice investing. We never sell your data. And it's actually quite engaging. It's how most people stay up to date on all that we're doing.
Thank you.
And how they can participate.
And thank you for joining us. And we will be back with you again soon. Take care.